At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Ooh. Oh, snap. Let me mute this. I'm tripping. What's up, good people? It's time for another session of that verbal cardio, man. We back. Back again. The timing is a little off. You know what I'm saying? We had to shoot something for dad jokes. So, we back, though. We back, man. Shout out to the patron saints up in the building, man. I appreciate y'all for showing up and showing out. You know what I'm saying? Dulce, Brandon, CJ, Tone, Aomi, Carla, Renee, Shayla, Cafe Olay, it's Miss Smiley, Jay Thomas, Zakia, Jonas C, Chris M. Like chatting with a friend reviews. That's a wild title. David Williams, Zane, Miss Makiba, Sapphire Blaze, KC, Jamal B, Nicole Fletcher. Man, shout out to Instagram for still not letting me go live. You lied to me. Instagram, y'all be lying. You know what I'm saying? Since you want to uphold community guidelines, how about not lying to people as a guideline? That's a pretty nifty guideline within the community, is to not just be lying to folks and be like, yeah, you know what I'm saying, you gonna get your capabilities back on this date, and then that date comes and goes and I still can't go live. You lied to me. That's against my community guidelines. I know y'all don't care because your Instagram, you can do what you want. You can just snatch pages and just be like, what you gonna do about it? I know I'm at the mercy of y'all, but come on, man. Come on, man. You told me you was going to do something, man. I held you to it. I held you to it, man. I believed in you. I was like, yo, Instagram said I'm banned from going live until July. I think it was like July 14th. Hold on. I'm looking for it right now. I'll tell you the exact day when I was supposed to be back in IG Live business. Let me find it. I can't find it, man. What the hell going on? What the hell going on? You know what? I'm going to take a shortcut. I know how to find it quicker. Sick of this, man. They playing your boy, man. They playing your boy because I had a good rhythm going. Okay, so Instagram told me, they was like, it happened on July 7th. They was like, you can't start or join live videos, and this ends on July 14th. It is now July 30th. I still can't go live. Community guidelines, right? Right? Community guidelines? Is that what we're talking about? Honor the guidelines. Honor your own guidelines. Isn't the date that I'm supposed to be back, isn't that a guideline? Or are you just going to not honor the guidelines? See, if we're going to be tight asses, if we're going to be sticklers, how about you stick to the date promised? Community guidelines, right? Sick of y'all, man. Tired of it. Tired of it, man. Listen, y'all, we got to be on a united front. All right? You got two choices for president. You're going to have to pick one or the other. We get it. You can't trust nobody. That's just politics. But some presidential candidates cannot stand. I ain't going to say no names, but one of them, I just can't. When you sitting here talking about police immunity, nah. Nope. Nope. You just made my decision easy. I cannot stand for police immunity in no shape or form. So if that's what you're riding on, if that's what you're talking about, nope. Nope. Can't have it. Can't have it. Not at all. We need to be focused on the Senate and Congress. We need to be focused on that Congress, that House of Representatives, and that Senate. You know what I'm saying? The president is just, you know, they just the face of what's going on. But that goddamn legislative branch. That's all I'm going to say. All right? Now, y'all gonna be in here like, well, Kamala did this. Listen, if Kamala ain't talking about police immunity, she got my goddamn vote. I don't believe blindly in Democrats or Republicans. But goddamn it, I can't have no police immunity. Especially in the wake of yet another police murder. Nah, man. Nah. That should make your decision easy. It should make your decision easy, man. I don't want to hear all the jibber jab and the nah, man. And ladies, women, it's up to you. You outnumber men. It's up to you. Black women going to do what black women going to do. Black women going to rise to the occasion. Black women are not the issue when it comes to making the right decision at the voting polls. It's you white women. The white women, you got to do your goddamn part. Because men going to be men and they're going to be like, I'm gonna just vote for Trump. Or I'm going to just not vote at all. I'm going to just sit here and not be involved and complain and fuss. White women, you dropped the ball last time. You got to do your goddamn part. Hispanic women, too, you ain't off the goddamn hook. Y'all need to do y'all parts. Black women, I ain't got nothing to say to y'all. Y'all going to get it handled. Y'all going to get it cracking. Y'all going to get it popping. Black women going to be active. They're going to be out there. They're going to have their stickers on. Already know how y'all going to do. But you white women and you Hispanic women, y'all got to do your goddamn part. Especially when they coming for y'all bodies. They coming for y'all bodies, man. The fuck we doing? What we talking about here? What we doing? White women, get your feet together. Stop being sneaky, man. Stop being sneaky out here when it's crunch time. All right? Make the right decision. Sick of y'all, man. You failed this last time. Don't do it again. Talking about some police immunity, man. If you don't get the fuck up out of here, man. If you get police immunity, man, everybody getting capped. They're going to be firing shots first. It's going to be a free-for-all in here. It's going to be GTA. Cops just tripping. Nah, man. Nope. Nah, man. They not going to be on no Lethal Weapon 2 shit. Diplomatic immunity. Nah, man. But let me get off the policy. Let me get off the politics. I didn't come here for that. You're not who I thought you were. Why are you creating division? Man, shut up. Hush. I'm coming in hot. Hush. These are crazy times we living in, man. The Olympics is in full swing. It's funny how patriotic we get around the Olympics, though. You know what I'm saying? We be like, man, America, get on my nerves, man. I'm triggered by the American flag. The Olympics coming. Like, all right, America, get them gold medals. Because I'd be lying if I wasn't paying attention to that gymnastics team. The goddamn track and field. The ladies of the track and field and the gymnastics. I'm all in. I'm all in on them, man. And I'm paying attention to the USA basketball team, of course. But, man, the women, they got my full attention. These young women out here going for the gold, it's amazing to see. Shout out to the men as well. But I got to be honest, I'm more interested in the women in this Olympics. You know, pause. It sound like, you know, could sound like I'm being creepy. But I'm not. I'm not. They babies to me. They babies. They all in their 20s, man. Look out. But I'm all in, man. They got fresh gold today. Fresh gold. The gymnastics, man. Shout out to them, man. It's amazing. Gymnasts amaze me, man. Gymnastics, acrobatics. I marvel at that every time I watch them. I'd be like, yo, how are you able to flip and dip, twist in the midair, land on your feet and know what the hell's going on? If I do one circle too fast, I'm done. I'm dizzy. I gotta sit down. Who am I? One spin, I'm out of here, man. One twirl, one Wonder Woman, this. Shit. What year is it? Who am I? I'm gonna take a seat, man. I just did something a little too quick. Let me just sit back down. What is it? 1985, Doc. What's my name? Who am I? It's just, do you have water? I just need, feeling a little nauseous. On one slow spin, I'm out of here. They out here flipping and dipping and landing and knowing where to land and how to land and just spinning and twisting, twirling, swinging, grabbing, catching. It's amazing to see. And I just be like, man, they be doing this with ashy hands and ashy feet. It's brilliant. Oh, it's amazing. I'm like, yo, man, you doing flips. I've always been mesmerized by flips. I was just like, yo, man, they just did a flip. When I would see kids like in school, when they would ride the swings and they would flip out backwards, I'd be like, yo, they flipped out backwards. And I definitely have inner ear issues. One of the patron saints said, I got inner ear. I do. I got a constant ringing in this ear. And you know, my balance is trash. Like once I close my eyes, my balance is trash. But I don't know how to get any of that fixed. You know what I'm saying? I go to the ENT. They got nothing for me, man. They got nothing for me. Man, I need for people to have stuff for me, man. Have stuff for me. I need answers. I need results. I need, like, you know what I'm saying? I need for stuff to happen, man. Tired of going up in these medical facilities. I went to, I had a doctor's appointment last week. Because, you know, just to meet up with a new primary doctor. And he was cool. You know what I'm saying? He was cool. But I feel like I ain't really connect with him. You know what I mean? I said, I want that connection when I'm in there. I want a connection with my medical provider. I want to feel like I'm not just some person in there. I want that. He's not a black doctor. I might need that black doctor. But if I'm going to get the black doctor, I got to go far for the black doc. And that's the thing, man. I'm Convenience McGee. So I'm torn between black doc and Convenience McGee. I'm torn, man, because I don't want to be going into L.A. and beyond all that traffic I got to brave for my doctor's appointment. But it is my health, and health is wealth. Health is everything. And I want to go to a doctor where I can be like, I can feel like, you know, because I got a black, my urologist that I went to, she was black. And then the girl that gave me the ultrasound on my ball sack, she was black and cute. She was black and cute. I was like, man, watch out, man. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. What are you doing here? But there's a comfort there. I got to be real, man. I'm comfortable with black folks. Like I was thinking about just life in general and who I gravitate towards and like, you know, what my surroundings are in terms of like my social constructs. And I was like, yo, black is my comfort zone. So I've lived in, now mind you, I don't want y'all to be like, well, Tony don't like us. That's not the case at all. It's just what I gravitate towards naturally. It's just like a natural like gravitation for me. Like growing up in Chicago, South Side, you know, Chicago's very segregated. So I grew up in a black household. All the kids in my neighborhood were black. I go to school, whole student body is black. I got some white teachers in there. My earliest memory in being in school, I had a teacher. She was a white lady, and she went off on me because I rocked in line, right? So I would rock in line. Like anytime I stood, it was hard for me to stand still, so I would just rock like this. I remember that was just like my rocking just gave me comfort. You know, so I would just be like doing this. And so she was getting fed up and she wanted me just to stand still in the line. So, you know, she was giving me problems on that. So I told my mom, and then my mom went up there and cussed her out. So that was my debut on the white teacher, right? So then, you know, I would have white teachers every so often, but the majority of my teachers were black women. So I'm taking in, you know, just black family, black friends, black surroundings, black faces. And then, you know, I'm running into adversity from adults, from, you know, like a white teacher giving me problems. And then, so, you know, that early interaction was like, oh, I don't know. You kind of, you know, clam up. And so just fast forward throughout my whole educational, you know, background, it was just black. Everything was black, blickety black, black. In a segregated city, that's just what it was. So fast forward to me moving to New Mexico. So now I'm excited that, you know, oh, all right, I get to have Mexican friends. I remember being excited about that. And I was just like, because I wasn't exposed to that kind of diversity on a close level. Like, you know, in Chicago, you go to certain areas. Chicago has a huge Hispanic population, but you have to go there. You know what I mean? And so I stayed primarily in my bubble that was close to where I lived, primarily in Chicago. So when I would go downtown, I would see white people. When I would go, you know, to the west side, I would see more Hispanic or whatever. But I was rarely on the west side, to be honest with you. Like, I was rarely over there. So, you know, my bubble, my experience was just black. So I get to New Mexico, I'm like, yo, I get to have Mexican friends. I'm excited, and I'm making those friends, you know what I'm saying? And I'm playing football, so now, you know, I got white teammates and, you know, Mexican teammates and black teammates. So I'm just like, all right, I'm getting multicultural now. Now, mind you, also, too, to go back to Chicago, my brothers were dating whoever, you know what I'm saying? So they were, you know, my brother's first wife, one of his... No, he had girlfriends before that, but like, you know, his first wife was Filipino. So that introduced me to, you know, Filipino. I was like, Filipino, what does that even mean? What's the Philippines? What is that? So I learned. I was just like, oh, okay. And then I got introduced to Filipino food. That Filipino food, let me tell you something right here, right now. Top five. Pancit, lumpia, calgareta, man, let's go. I was like, yo, this food right here is amazing. So I was introduced to Filipino cuisine in the 80s when my brother was dating, you know, his soon-to-be wife, and she was Filipino. So I was just learning so much, and I was just like, wow, okay, you know. And then one of her sisters, I was like, well, what's up? Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm talking about? What we trying to do? So that just expanded my little, you know, my world. So granted, her sister wasn't feeling me, man. She was a little bit older. You know what I'm saying? When you a girl and you like 1 or 2 years older, that's like leaps and bounds from one another. She 2 years older than me. I was like, I would never date your young ass. I'm like, hey, man, watch out. So anyway, so that was my introduction to Filipino people. And I was just like, this is dope, man. So I was learning. Fast forward back. So we in New Mexico. So, you know, I'm just becoming more multicultural, right? But then I would always gravitate towards blacks. No matter what, like, you know, I'm in Clovis, New Mexico, population 30,000. I'm sure the percentage of blacks in Clovis, New Mexico was slim. And so, but I would gravitate towards, you know, because initially I was like, yo, I got Mexican friends. I was over here with the Mexican friends, and I was like, then I just slowly drifted on back to the blacks. And it wasn't even an intentional move. It was just my comfort. I was just like, blacks, here we are again. So now I'm just thinking about, like, my life from that point on. It was just like, when you look at my circle of closest friends, it's just black every time. Every chapter in my life, just every, you know, chapter, it was just blackness. And then I was thinking, because I was just randomly thinking of this the other day, and I was just like, that's just my tribe. And like, even now, it's the same thing. Now, mind you, I have friends of other cultures and other ethnicities and races. Don't get me wrong. People that I love. But when I think about my immediate, like, surroundings of family and friends, it's just black. And I'm just like, wow, you just naturally gravitate towards your tribe, no matter what that may be. Like, you know what I'm saying? There are people that might be a white person that just gravitate. They just naturally gravitate towards black people for friendship or, like, you know, common ground. That's just their comfort zone. Or like Asian might, you know, gravitate towards white or Asian, or, you know, people always gravitate towards something. Some people just stay in their own, you know, race boxes. And I think a lot of times we think things are intentional, and sometimes they are, but sometimes they're just really not. It's just like a comfort zone. And, you know, when we talk about, like, white people, that everything about them is white, you know what I'm saying? Their friends, their family, their surroundings, their culture, their, you know, taste and everything. Everything's big white. And then you be like, you racist. Like, no, this is just naturally my world. And so, and you know, there's a lot of things to dig through when it comes to that. But I think on the surface, we'd be like, can we trust one another here? Just given that how we tribe out. And for me, you know, even though I gravitate towards my tribe and I stay in that, I'm all for, like, you know, connection on any level, any ethnicity, any box, any type of, you know, race we want to go to. Cause I just naturally, like, connect easy. And, whether you be Russian, whether you be Chinese, whether you're from Singapore, Bangladesh, whatever, it's like, you know, when I'm exposed to different cultures and different races, I can find a connection without even forcing myself. It's just like a natural vibe for me. So when I'm learning about these new cultures, I'm like, oh, tell me about this and tell me about that. I'm genuinely interested. And I can always find, like, common ground and, like, a common connection. But I always gravitate back home. And for me, blackness is home for me. And I just realized that. I know we say it all the time, like, yeah, but I really feel it without even making that a conscious move. It's just natural. It's just like, oh, you know what? Black has been home for me this whole time without me even realizing it. And so that was just something I was thinking about this week. When I think about my fan base and, like, you know, the people I'm comfortable around, and, you know, I just noticed that was the pattern. And I was like, all right, well, this is who I am. And that's all right. You know what I'm saying? That's cool. I'm not mad at it. So I just wanted to share that because it was something that crossed my mind, like, this week. And y'all know I just be talking about whatever's going on with my mind and my thoughts, if you will. It was something else I wanted to touch on. No ads this week. So we just chop it up real quick. I saw on social media. So Robert Downey Jr. is slated to play Dr. Doom. And, you know, some people are just like, what? And, you know, given all the multiverse shenanigans that they've been doing, I'm just like, ah, oh, here we go. At first, I didn't like it. I was like, no. That's Tony Stark, man. Come on, man. And then, you know, Big Irish J hit me up about a comic book arc where it was Tony Stark was Dr. Doom. And I was like, all right, you know, and I'm always give the utmost respect to the source material. I'm always give the utmost respect to the comic books. But for me, I was just like, no, man, just bring Tony back. I'm not feeling this. But I know Robert Downey Jr. is going to kill the role because he kills the roles. I already know that. You know, I already know he's capable of killing the role. And I am interested in seeing his contrast between Tony Stark and Victor Von Doom. I am super interested in how he would carry that role. Like when you look at Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer, you can get a glimpse into a Dr. Doomy type of vibe and character from that. Not saying that his character was that dark and that villainous in that movie, but you can just get a different feel for Robert Downey Jr. in that, where he tones down the personality and charm in that movie. So it's like, all right, okay. And I can definitely, because Dr. Doom is super intelligent. Like, his character is like, Reed Richards and Dr. Doom are some of the most smartest people in the Marvel Universe. So it's like, you always feel like, when you look at Robert Downey Jr., you always feel like he's thinking about something. Like, you always feel like he's one step ahead. So I get the casting as far as, like, what Robert Downey Jr. can bring, but I was still just like, nah, man. I see what you're trying to do, but. So it was just very surprising, because it came out of left field. I didn't see this coming at all. So what I wanted to bring up, though, was, and you're right. Josh Brolin was Cable and he was Thanos, and that worked. It absolutely worked. I like Josh as Cable, loved him as Thanos. So I know it could work. And like I said, I have no doubt in the skills of Robert Downey Jr., but it was just like, wait, what? But I want to say this. People are trying to compare the Jonathan Majors thing with Robert Downey Jr. Like, yo, they gave Jonathan Majors a raw deal, but they let Robert Downey Jr. do what he do, even though he had that drug pass, all those arrests, all that stuff he was doing, breaking into people's houses and sleeping on the couch. I don't like that comparison. I don't think those comparisons are fair. What I will say is that I do agree that Jonathan Majors got a raw deal. I feel like they overreacted based on what went on with him. I feel like he shouldn't have lost his role as Kang. I feel like they jumped the gun, and I feel like they overdid it. And the reason I think this is a bad comparison is because the stuff Robert Downey Jr. was struggling with and going through was in his past. You know, we need to have a fairer comparison. We would need an actor that was in the midst of a successful acting campaign or role, and then something happens and then they strip it away. The better comparison is Johnny Depp. What happened to Johnny Depp and his wife is a better comparison, because when that shit started going down with Johnny Depp, they stripped him of his Jack Sparrow role, and they cut him out of the Harry Potter franchise. And like, so we know that Hollywood moves on you quick now when you fucking up at home or domestically. We saw it happen with Johnny Depp, who's not black, who's a big star, a bigger star than Jonathan Majors, and they were still like, we got to get him out of the Jack Sparrow role. We're taking him out of the Harry Potter franchise. We going to can that movie about the death of Biggie Smalls with him and Forest Whitaker. We just not even going to release that. And so I feel like that's a better comparison than the Robert Downey Jr. thing. Because Robert Downey, he struggled with drugs and, like, you know, substance abuse and stuff like that. That's more of an internal struggle. But like I said, it was in his past. And even when they were going to book Robert Downey Jr. for the role of Iron Man, the studios were against it. And this is before Disney came. You know, once Disney, they're going to be some tight asses. And Disney owns Pirates of the Caribbean and all that stuff. So they were like, we got the family to think about. But at the time that they were, you know, casting for Iron Man, it was Marvel. But they were still hesitant on, you know, hiring Robert Downey Jr. because of his past. They were like, oh, we don't know about this, man. You know, he got the drug issues. He got all these problems. You know what I'm saying? And he was coming back around, you know, getting his feet together. And so, you know, Jon Favreau, he had to fight to get Robert Downey Jr. in the mix. So the studio wasn't even on board. And that's another reason why it was just like, you know, he's not tried and true. He has this history, you know. That's why Terrence Howard ended up making more than Robert Downey Jr. for the first Iron Man, because they were like, I mean, we'll give you $500K. We don't know, man. We don't know. So I feel like that comparison that they're making with Robert Downey Jr. and Jonathan Majors, I feel like it doesn't match, in my opinion. Like, that's a bad take. And racism is in Hollywood, 100%, 100%. But we've seen them in the midst of big campaign and big movie and big franchise. They snatch a white man out of that role too. So, but I still feel like Johnny Depp is owed an apology. And I feel like Jonathan Majors should get some of his roles back. Now, you know, him losing the army gig, I already know. There's some soldiers out here in this military that got some dicey past. They got some shaky, dicey backgrounds, and they all up in this military learning how to use a gun. They out here with cases and DUIs and domestic issues and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So it's like, mad dicey. But I really feel like Jonathan Majors got a raw deal. He got a raw deal for sure. But I just think comparing Robert Downey Jr.'s journey to his is just a bad take. And that's my opinion on that. That's how I feel on that right there. I also wanted to say this too. The Cosby Show is now underrated. I know what Bill Cosby did. But the Cosby Show, that's premium black entertainment. What the Cosby Show was able to do when it did it was just incredible. That was the most watched show on TV, a black family. That was the number one show on television. It was funny. It was dope. The family dynamic, the jokes, the cast. It was just firing on all cylinders, man. A mixture of black skin tones within the same family was dope to see. Everybody on the black spectrum was represented visually. Bill Cosby's darker. Felicia Rashad is a little bit lighter. Lisa Bonet and the older sister, Sandra, a little light skin. Theo and Vanessa and Rudy, darker skin. It was just like everybody could see themselves within the black dynamic in that show. They were funny. They were well off. You know, they wasn't struggling. They wasn't in the projects. It wasn't hard times and woe is me. It was just a fun, dope family. And you see them going through college and engagements and marriages and, like, you know what I'm saying? You're getting the in-law aspect of it and, like, you know what I'm saying? Like meeting who your kids are dating and, like, you know, breaking down that dynamic and a mother that ain't having it and just... It was just a fantastic show. And, like, I know what Bill Cosby did, but it's like, yo, what he did aside, man, we cannot sweep that show under the rug. And it holds up. The show holds up. It's still hilarious and funny and dope. And I just feel like we overlook that show now. We keep talking about the Fresh Prince and Martin all the goddamn time. But the Cosby Show is the cream of the crop. It's like, because it was funny, man. Bill Cosby, man, that episode where he kept having to go to the store because it was Thanksgiving and they kept sending him out in that rainstorm to go get the ingredients. And every time he went out, it was getting worse and worse outside. And then one time he came back to the house and the wind just blew the door open and he was standing there in that trench coat and it was treachery. Or the time when they were just having mass snowball fights outside and Theo and Cockroach come diving into the house and there was just mad snowballs going. The Gordon Gartrell shirt, the time Vanessa and Vanessa and Denise fought. It was just like, yo, this was so dope. The time Claire had to check Alvin. So many dope moments, man. And then he gave us a new intro every season. No bullshit ass, corny, special effect intros, man. This was like them really being involved in the intro for real with concepts and musics and styles. It was just like, I remember the season 6 intro where they had the jazz background and they had the Apollo theme in the background and they were just dancing. It was like every season they would give a different intro that was fire, that was well thought out, that was like, all right, this is the theme for this one. This is the theme for this one. And I was just like, yo, man. We got to give the Cosby Show more props, man. We don't talk about it enough. Regardless of what Bill Cosby did, we got to look at the art. We got to look at what was given to us. You know, as much as we want to be in actors' business, and you know what I'm saying, their whole goal is to give us art, give us entertainment. That's the goal. Personal lives are personal lives, whatever's going on. So we got to learn to separate the art from the person, regardless of whether they're a good person, whether they've done some shady deeds, whatever. The art. And I feel like the art and the visuals and the impact that was the Cosby Show should transcend, you know, what he did off the court. Because the impact to us, to the viewers watching it, to the kids and us seeing a family like this, it was just like, man, this is dope to see on a maximum level now. This show was the number one show on TV. So everybody was connecting with this black family. And I was just like, yo, this is fire. Not really when he uses his popularity to hurt others. I hate Diddy. So y'all can't separate the art from the person. I'm tapping into the patron saints right now. Nope. Here's the thing though. Here's the thing that's different with the Cosby Show. Cause it's a little different. It's a little different for musicians. Because musicians, a lot of times it's more personal, it's more one-on-one. So, like, when R. Kelly writes a song called Age Ain't Nothing But a Number, that's directly connected to how he was out here preying on young women, right? So it's just like, nah, man. But when you have a show like The Cosby Show that has different writers, that has a different cast of characters, it's an ensemble piece. So even though, you know, Bill Cosby was the captain of that ship, But it's still other people involved. It's still, you know, Claire and Rudy and Vanessa and Theo. And like, there's a cast, there's a writer's room, there's other voices at play in the artistic creation of this thing. So The Cosby Show is a little different than Bill Cosby himself. Now going to see Bill Cosby as a comedian, then you'd be like, nah, man, watch out. But when you're talking about a whole TV show with a whole ensemble and a whole cast, it's like, okay, are you gonna sacrifice the entirety of that show just for one person's misdeeds? That's the difference for me when I talk about separating the art from the person. But when it comes to like, it's a little different when it's like, so like, let's say the song "More Money, More Problems," you know, P. Diddy produced that song. You're not going to listen to it because of what Diddy did? You going to turn it off when that song come on? Like, how are you handling it? And that's another thing, too. That's another thing, too, man. A Different World was also spawned from The Cosby Show. So now we're getting images of Black college life and that whole experience, which is great to see on national TV. Now we get in a whole nother world of just like, oh, now we in college now. Now we in higher education. As much as what Cosby did was trash. And I'm not saying it wasn't, but it was like, man, but the other stuff he was putting out there that affected me on a mental level, on an educational level, on an image level. For me, it just transcends his crimes. For me, personally. Now, I know some people, you holding on to what he did off the court. But for me, his impact transcended him. Like the education that he was providing when he was doing picture pages and, you know, talking about Blackness and education and Blacks getting, you know, better education. Now, I will agree, like, you know what I'm saying? He was too much of a tight ass when it came to like cussing and, you know, judging other comedians and stuff like that. But for me, you got to take what you can use from people when it comes to the art and entertainment. Take what you can use for yourself. Ain't nobody perfect. We don't know what people be doing behind closed doors. You put people on the pedestal, you don't know what they're capable of, how they treat people, none of that. You know what I'm saying? You take what you can get and apply to your life and your way of thinking. So for me, like, you know, that image of a Black family, that image of college life and, you know, respecting higher education and stuff like that and the value of secondary education. You take that and like, all right, I can apply this to my life. I can apply, you know, the image of a successful Black marriage and them making a good income and not being in the projects. You take that on. The different shades of different Black tones within the same household. You take that in and just like going to college and meeting friends of different backgrounds and everybody's Black, but everybody's different. And we're all in the same institution trying to get higher education. You take that in and like, you know, being proud of your Blackness and being able to thrive within the white Hollywood system. You take that in, you know what I mean? And so once we start getting into people's personal lives and personal beliefs and outlooks and stuff like that, it dilutes everything that you can draw from. And so, you know, that's that pedestal stuff. Like, you don't know these people in real life. So you take what you can get and then go from there. But I was just looking at the Cosby Show intro yesterday. And I was just like, man, you know what? This whole show was dope. Because, you know, we can't talk about R. Kelly. Unless we in the Nate. Unless we like, man, he was trash, he was trash, he was trash. He was trash, he was trash. But the reality is he was the king of R&B. The reality is he was the king of R&B. We can't say it. He's Voldemort now. We can't bring him up. But the reality is when we have these king of R&B discussions, the reality is this. It's R. Kelly. It's R. Kelly. We just can't say it. But we know the answer. We be throwing Usher in the mix, but we know. We know what it is. We know. We know who the king is. We got to be real. We got to be real with ourselves. Robert Kelly. When you look at his run from 1991 all the way deep into the 2000s, nobody's doing. Usher's in the conversation for sure, but man, Robert Kelly was making hits for other people. He was making hits for others and his own hits with the longevity. Just when you thought he was done, he would come around the corner with something. It's crazy, man. Robert Kelly wrote a smash hit for Michael Jackson. Let's be real. Let's be real. I'm just saying, dog. He was out here. He was killing remixes. He was killing features. He was putting on other artists. Remember Changing Faces? They went platinum. I don't know what other artists Usher was putting on. Don't kill me, y'all. I'm just talking numbers and just. But we're not gonna talk about it. We're not gonna talk about it. Hey. Usher, he did bring in Justin Bieber. He produced Justin Bieber? He wrote his music? Or did he discover him? He mentored him.
I think he discovered him.
Did he write and produce? I don't know, man. Justin Bieber did get huge, but mentorship, that's not enough. R. Kelly was in that studio. He was writing. He was producing. He was. It's a little different. R. Kelly was writing shit and producing it. We know who it is, y'all. We just can't say it. We know who it is. It's wild business. I wanted to get serious for a moment. So, actress Erica Ash, she recently passed away. She lost a battle with cancer. I met her on the set of Outlaw Johnny Black. That's where I first met her. And immediately I was like, yo, who is, because I wasn't privy to her before I met her. And I didn't know she had done Mad TV and she was on all kind of stuff. And like, you know, oh, snap. Okay. Yeah. But she was hilarious. Like, you know, on set. And I was just like, man, this girl is funny and quick. I was like, man. And I was doing like these little interviews with the cast. And she was just so quick and funny. I was just like, yo, man, you funny as hell. And we just hit it off immediately, right? And then, you know, so we would communicate every now and then. And then she came to one of my shows, Tony Baker and Friends. And then she was just like, yo, I want to talk to you about my stand-up set. And so, so we met up. We met up at this place, a little vegan joint called Sun Cafe. And we sat there, we talked about jokes, but we talked about life too, and just had a great convo, great energy, just a great time. And she was just like, yeah, let's get together again. You know, I'm gonna have you over for dinner. I was like, say less. Now, what I was saying in my post while, you know, I wrote out the caption, I'm notoriously reclusive nowadays. Like, it's hard to get me to come out for a one-on-one hangout. I this is what I'm struggling with, but it's hard for me to come out for the one-on-one hangout. And, like, I'll show up to the game night at the group activities, but when it's the one-on-one, I'll be like, ah, I start getting like, I don't know. And so, I met up with her at that restaurant, and then when she was like, yo, you know, come by the crib, you know, I'll cook. And I was like, all right, okay, all right, I'm going to do it. And so so I did, you know, I went over there, and she ended up having to order, you know, takeout because she wasn't feeling well. And, you know, I can tell that she was very, like, you know, she's very weak and like moving slow and stuff like that. So I was like, but still, great time. We was talking, we was chatting, talked about art, real estate, just life. And, you know, but I didn't want to pry into, like, you know, her business, her health business. So I didn't ask, like, you know, what's going on exactly, you know? And so I never asked directly what the illnesses were. And then, you know, I know I'm prone to ask the hard hitting questions, but I just didn't want to, you know, ask. I was just like, let me hush. And so, good times, went over there, had a great time, but I'm glad I went, man, because I would have missed those moments with her. I had no clue, you know, how dire, you know, her situation was, but I'm so glad I did go, because I would have missed those moments. And it's just like, man, I need to bring my ass out, you know, more often. Because, and the crazy thing was, I had a show at the Improv on Sunday. And when I was leaving the Improv, she popped up in my head heavy for some reason. I bullshit you not. I'm not just saying this just to be like, oh, I feel something. Some people be lying. But I was like, she popped up in my head. I remember I was sitting in the car on Fairfax before I started driving. I was just like, Erica Ash. I just started thinking about her. And I was like, I ain't heard from her in a minute. Man, I need to hit her up. And I was just, this is the dialogue I'm having in my head. I need to hit her up, man, see how she's doing. And I ended up, you know, getting distracted with other stuff on my phone, and then I drove on. You know what? I should send her a text, man, just to check in. Because I remember having these thoughts of, like, the red lights and stuff. But she just popped up heavy in that moment. And then I never sent the text out because it was already like 10:30, maybe 10:40. Now, mind you, I'll be texting people late. You know, I got to stop doing that. But I'll be texting. I text people late. It's not because I'm on some booty call shit or I'm just trying to be disrespectful. I tend to text late because I like to text when I'm thinking about you or when I feel it, because I forget. I will forget, and then I forgot to reach out, and then so I tend to text impulsively. I'll be like, thinking about you right now, bam, boom. Because if not, then I'll just forget, and then you'll get washed down into my thoughts of just clutter. So, but I didn't send the text out, and then the next morning I look at the group chat, and B. Lou had said, you know, Erica passed, and I was just like, wait, what? I was like, I was just thinking about her. And I was just like, man. So that was just like a heartbreaking, you know, reality. But it was just a valuable lesson. And just like, man, sometimes you just got to get out your own head and just connect. And like, If I didn't hang out with her in those two invites, I would be sitting here like, man, you know, she asked me to hang out, she asked me to come over, and I never did. And then I'd be sitting here with regret. And just because I'm reclusive for no good reason, you know, when people wanna connect and reach out and just, you know, spend time and just be in your company and stuff like that. Of course, we got to have our boundaries and we got to have our own, like, little pocket of peace or whatever that may look like. But I tend to, like, overthink and just, you know, punk out. And so I'm glad that I'm really grateful that I did choose to go hang out and be in her company and her time and space. And, you know, it was just great vibes. And just, and usually 9 times out of 10, when I do hang out, when I do come out, when I do bring my punk ass out of the cave, it's a good time. It's just me in my head too much beforehand. It's just like, I don't know, but like 9 times out of 10, I'm like, man, I'm glad I went. Usually when I come out of wherever I go to, I'm usually coming away from it like, I'm glad I did this. But it's those thoughts before I do it that's just messing it all up. But definitely my condolences to Erica's family and friends and just everybody that knew her and loved her and just, you know, sucks, man. She was 46. She would have been 47 this year in September. We were the same age. We were both born in 77. Trash. Trash. And you know, we always get grateful when you lose somebody. We get grateful, then that's when we start talking about the, man, I gotta reach out more, I gotta tell people I love them, man, I gotta stay on top of my health. You know, we always go through these thoughts like, man, I'm gonna make the change, man, right here. We gotta tell people why they still here, you know what I'm saying? We just gotta do all of the stuff, man. And then we go back into our routine every goddamn time. And it's just like, and cancer is just so versatile with the bullshit. Cancer's out here. I'm gonna find a way to take you out. I'm going to catch you from multiple angles. I'm going to get your ass. I'm sick of cancer, man, because it's just like, bruh. Give us a chance out here, man. Every goddamn time, man. And then you be trying to stay on top of it. You try to watch what you eat. You try to exercise. You try to get your checkups. You try to get your blood work. You try to, and sometimes it's just, sometimes even that's not enough. And cancer's like, nah, it's not enough. I want your life. Sucks, man. So my heart eternally goes out to any of you that have lost loved ones to cancer, any of you that have, you yourself have battled cancer and won. If you're battling cancer right now, heart goes out to all of you. Because you just never know. You never can tell, man. And this sucks. Big musty, man. Tired of it. But here we are with another loss. Yeah, so absolutely. Heart's going out on all fronts. And my heart goes out to my Sigma brother from New Mexico State, Grant. Grant Taylor, my heart goes out to you and your family, bro. I don't even know if you watch Verbal Cardio, bro, but you know what I'm talking about, man. So, yeah, man. Death is big raggedy, man. Big musty. Big musty. Sick of it. I think about it all the time. It's impossible for me not to think about death because, you know, I lost my son too early. So it's like, it's impossible for me not to think about it. But anywho. I didn't want to hit y'all with the somber at the end of the verbal cardio, but here we are. Here we are. I know it was one more thing I wanted to talk about, but I forgot what it was. But we'll say that for the next one. Wait, why do I have peanut butter listed on the... Okay. So I wrote peanut butter down as some topics I wanted to talk about on verbal cardio, peanut butter. So I noticed my weight had gone up a little bit. Y'all probably can't tell. I don't know if you can tell or not, but it did go up on the scale, right? But I've been back on that peanut butter. And here's the thing. So I get these protein poppers from this place called Nectar by the crib. So what the protein poppers are is like peanuts, like peanut butter. It's like, you know, little, those, I think dates is in there too. And like, you know what I'm saying? It's a quick shot of protein for your day, right? And you get two in the little container. You get two poppers, right? So I had been on these a while back, but I've been avoiding peanut butter as a whole. So I've been easing back into the poppers because I'm like, yeah, nice little protein source. You know what I'm saying? So I've been going and I've been getting four of them at a time. I started with the two and I was like, man, I've been doing good. You know what I'm saying? Been working out, been slimming it down. You know what I'm talking about? You feel me? I'm down here at the 200, 199, you know, proud of myself, feeling myself. So I was getting four poppers and just popping them. Breaking my fast, walking around while eating the poppers. I'm doing my little shopping, my little random errands. I'm eating the poppers. Now, you know what I'm saying? So now then, I'm back on the peanut butter kick because I love peanut butter. So I'm back on the peanut butter kick. I'm getting too comfortable now. Now I'm at Whole Foods. They done reestablished the freshly squoze, where you know you turn the machine on and you can get that fresh peanut butter straight from the tap, right? They got these at Whole Foods. You turn on that little machine and it just comes out and they grind it right there. They squoze it into your container right there. You getting that fresh. So for a long time, they didn't have the honey roasted peanuts in the squoze joint, in that freshly squoze peanut butter joint. They brought the honey roasted peanuts back. And I was like, guess who's back? So I grabbed my little container and get the freshly squozed honey peanut butter right into the container. And when I tell you, when I get this particular freshly squozed honey peanut, I just put it in the container and get a spoon and eat it like that. So now I'm doing the protein poppers and the freshly squozed. So I noticed my weight going back up. I'm like, it's the goddamn peanut butter. I was getting too comfortable, man. I was getting beside myself. And this was multiple days a week. I started out like, all right, I'm going to just do once or twice a week. I was doing it 5 days. So I had to get back on track, y'all. Because peanut butter will pudge your boy out. So I had to get back on track. Because I went up to like 210. And then when I went to the doctor and they measured me with my clothes on and stuff like that, I was like 217 on that scale. Mind you, I had already eaten. I'd already had mad water and I had clothing on. Usually when I hit the scale, I'm just in my underwear. And I like to weigh myself before I start eating for the day. And so I was like 217. So I knew that 217 was in reality like 214, 213. So then when I got on the scale, I was like, man, 217. And I got on the scale with my drawers on. I was 210. And I was like, damn, man, 210. It's the goddamn peanut butter. So now, like on my last weigh-in, I was 205. So now I just gotta chill out. I gotta chill out on the peanut butters, on the protein poppers and the butters and the freshly squozes. I gotta chill out. Gotta chill out. Now the honey ain't the problem. It's the peanut butter itself. The honey is fine. It's that goddamn. You gotta know yourself. You gotta know yourself and what you're doing and what you're eating, man. And I was like, I've been up to no good. And now I got to check myself. So here we are. My ideal weight, Kev just asked me this yesterday. My ideal weight, I like to be 199, 200. I like to be 200 flat. I like to be that. 200 flat. I don't want the 210s and the two-somethings. I want that 200 and 199. 199 would be ideal. If I can just be 199, like something that's on sale, that's when you got me, man. Give me that 199, that 199 with an L in there. With peanut butter, it'd be so good, man. I'm 6'2", yeah. That 199.5 is all right with me. Anyway, man, I appreciate y'all, man. I almost folded in this episode, but I held it together once again. I was going to do a whole memory lane joint, but I'm gonna save that for the next verbal cardio. I had it all mapped out, but I ended up going long on other stuff about the Cosby Show and like separating the art from the person and all that good stuff. And I almost cried in this episode. My eyeballs twerked. And they were wet. They were juicy at the bottom. Almost got me. Almost got me, but I stood firm. Have I folded on verbal cardio yet? I don't think I have. I've definitely folded on the movie nights with the patron saints. But I don't know if I folded on verbal cardio. Yes and no. I'm getting yes and no's. Not completely. I've definitely come close a few times on verbal cardio, but I can't remember if I did a complete fold. But I know I can fold with y'all. I already know it's a safe place. But I'll be holding it together. So we're going to do the memory lane next episode, because I had it all mapped out. The transition was going to be, I saw Wolverine and Deadpool and Wolverine. So it made me think about Wolverine heavy. And it was like, and Hugh Jackman was so great in Deadpool and Wolverine. And it was like, yo, he made his debut as Wolverine in the first X-Men. That was the year 2000. That was going to be my focus year on this memory lane, was going to be the year 2000. So we're going to save that for next verbal cardio. We're going to do the year 2000. We're going to talk about that year. And so, but anyway, go see it. I'm about to do a review for Deadpool and Wolverine right after I record this, so stay on the lookout for the review. I won't do a spoiler review. And but yes, the review is coming soon. Anyway, man, I appreciate y'all. I love y'all. And thank you for tuning in to another session of that verbal cardio.